say there's so much going on, and poor Ben is stuck
Ben's
in a
sadly away on Jedi business right now.
Yeah, away on Jedi business. He's been you know reaching out to us through the Force via the Force about all this news, and it's like this might be the first time he's ever missed a record, and the one week he missed it, he gets so much.
We just got access to the vaults of Mount Tantus. Mm-hmm. We're going in. We're going in deep into the bowels of Mount Tantus tonight. Well, yeah. I don't know. Did we get a sneak peek? Did we get a tease? We'll talk about that later, but
we
got news. We've got lots of news to discuss.
All of the news. Yeah. Yeah.
Should we go trailers first? Should we go movie news first? Should we go writing, hires?
Yeah, those are all good. Let's talk about Mandalorian Grogu, because that might be the least tidbit. I mean, we got an official date for the Mandalorian and Grogu movie, soon to be renamed. There's no way that's the final name of that movie, right?
No, it can't be. It's got to be. I imagine it's got to allude to some sort of battle or some sort of war in the stars involving Thrawn. Maybe I don't know. Who's to say?
Yeah, but. Yeah, they're announcing it for May 22nd, 2026. So a little over 2 years from right now, which I have mixed feelings about. What are you thinking about that, Grant?
Yeah,
I feel like I'm doing like a newscaster voice. I don't know what's going on with me. Go ahead.
No, I feel the same thing. I feel like maybe they are still trying to figure out what the story is with Ahsoka universe colliding with Mandalorian's universe, and sort of what they can tell is a sort of like macro story with Thrawn, and what that all means. Is it Heir to the Empire? Is that the new title? Is there something else with the clones? Is there the origins of the cloning process? Is that what we're seeing essentially? Is there a Snoke? Is there something else? Is it the origins of the First Order? I mean, like, there's a lot to consider here.
There's got to be a Snoke based on everything that's going on in Bad Batch and how much time we've got between now and then. There's got to be a Snoke that shows up. But I mean, part of me is almost like, do they just name it instead of like Star Wars blank? This may be way out there prediction is like, maybe they don't actually call it Star Wars. It's in there, right? But maybe it's just like Mandalorian Heir to the Empire, right? Like just do it that way.
That's fun. It's going to get people in the theater. I mean, the Mandalorian has such a draw already on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
I imagine lots are going to go to theaters to watch. And I know that when Mandalorian episodes, go to theaters, sometimes when they do these sort of special events, lots of people show up, and it's actually a really fun time. And obviously VFX just sing on the big screen. So it's like, I can't wait to see what they do there.
Me too.
But what's fun about this is like, what is the story of Mandalorian and Grogu? Like if we were to break this right now, like what do you think is going to happen between them, and sort of what's Grogu's fate? Like, it's just, to me, it's like, trying to understand where Grogu ends up at the end of this movie is really what I've been thinking about for the past couple of weeks, and like what that character means to Star Wars.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to kind of think about it, because again, they are, to right now, the working title is Mandalorian and Grogu. I mean, this is the first time Grogu has been put front and center in the naming. So he's got to be the crux of this entire story. And it's odd because you almost start to think it's got to be the Empire gets their hands on Grogu, but I kind of hope that's not the story, because I feel like we've seen that story so many times. I mean, we've just been dealing an entire season of the Bad Batch with that as a plot line, right? So yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Part of me thinks that they're going to sort of like, upturn the sacred rock under which the sort of Yoda species, exists, and the sort of their homeworld and
interesting
who they are as a culture. Like, it almost seems like that's kind of the organic sort of pull, but I also know that that's sort of viewed as sacrilege in Star Wars, like by many fans, or like they're kind of like, we should never see Yoda's species, there's more power to his character if we don't really reveal that mystery.
I was firmly in that camp, and then along came Yaddle. Here's the thing. We now have like three Yodas wandering around the universe. Like,
it's time.
At this point,
Boba Fett was people made the same argument for Boba Fett. They were like, this character is vastly more interesting if you explore nothing about the character and you sort of don't show what he does with his helmet off, you know, like, and then, you know, I think people make the same argument for Yoda, but it's like, at this point, it's like, I think organically, it's almost like, where is Grogu's home?
Yeah, you gotta pull on that thread eventually. For a franchise or for a galaxy of stories that have been around for 50 years at this point, you gotta, right?
If like, I was breaking the story, I almost feel like that's the inevitable ending for that character is to reunite with almost all the Yodas.
it's been nearly half a century. Can you think of like somewhere else in pop culture where a mystery has lasted for half a century before someone decided to reveal it, right? Like it's okay. It's not going to ruin it. And the other thing is like, I'd rather them do it on the big screen in a movie than on like season 4, episode 3 of The Mandalorian, which I love The Mandalorian, but like, come on, that deserves a movie.
Yeah. Anyways, that's where my head's been. And I feel like that's, if I was breaking it, that's ultimately like the only place I could take it. Honestly, I can't think of another place to go with Grogu other than
I never
just Luke to just, you know, join the temple and become a Jedi. But it's like, we know he does. And we can't, it's hard to fathom that Kylo would attack the precious baby. You know?
No, I think, I mean, this is the issue with introducing all these Force users, right? Is like, you have to figure out how to get them out of the picture between episode 6 and episode 7, right? And out of the picture in a way that doesn't like, they got slaughtered at Luke's temple, because that's just not fun. And I'm all for, I've come around to introducing all these like Cal Kestis and all these other Force users and Padawans and Jedi. But like, you got to figure it out. So absolutely, like, you need, like, part of me almost like pictures like Grogu's end is like the end of Close Encounters, right?
Me
like,
too. Just, me too. I'm right there with you. This is where
walks into the spaceship.
And now this news, I'm just thinking about it more and more, and it's pretty solidified in my mind that it's like, I think Grogu has to reunite with all the other Grogu's essentially. Like,
he goes back in time and ends up in the Senate in episode 1?
I'll take it.
There's not Yodas. I'm sorry. I'm getting mixed up with ET. Right. I'm starting to rewrite ET in my mind. He goes hang out with the Grebe Leagues. But in all seriousness, like I originally assumed they were going to do this around December of 2025. And I like that it's still 2 years out, because as we've talked about, I think the biggest issue with episode 9, that's a strong statement. But like one of the biggest issues with trying to run it is like they stuck with that release date. And now it seems like 2 years, that gives them a little more time, like, because they're ready to go in production. It gives them a little more time to break it down, to make sure it's good. I mean, I do love me a Christmas Star Wars movie, so I'm a little bummed that I'm not going to be going to the theater in December. But like, I'll take it. Like, give them 2 years to make sure they get this, whatever right means. But you know what I mean? That they're not feeling rushed to do it.
I agree. And I think Tales of the Empire will help contextualize maybe what's going on with Thrawn. I mean, further, you know, and more and more material that we get will sort of hash out what Thrawn means to canon. You know,
that is A+ segueing.
Yeah. Oh, I
know. It was just really excellent.
I just think there's a lot of work to do with Thrawn still.
Like, agreed. Yeah.
And to get to a movie with him, if he is indeed going to be the villain, what is the slate before
that? Was my question. So there is no slate as far as we know. Like the only show, there's only two shows in production or post-production that we know of. That's always key. That are out, like The Acolytes set, that's coming out in a couple months. And then we have Andor season 2, and we have Skeleton Crew season 1. Skeleton Crew is in the Mandoverse, but I would not assume they're going to touch much on anything going on in the lore. I think they just are going to connect those characters later on. So that's the question. Is, I know they did announce that Ahsoka season 2 is in development, right? Because we had Filoni's picture and he's writing. But I cannot, I do not. I mean, what do you think, Grant? Do you?
I think you do release Ahsoka season two before this Mando movie. I think you have to, because there's such a cliffhanger there, and you almost want to show that there's real stakes to the whatever's going to happen in that film. And the war for Mandalore just occurred.
Yep.
The Mandalorians are essentially probably going to take over, or, you know, repopulate Mandalore, I imagine. And I don't know what threat they face other than sort of whatever sort of laws are stipulated by the New Republic. You know, I don't understand what is the threat there. And so I think Ahsoka season two could really spell out what Thrawn is doing when he returns, essentially.
Yeah, I think Ahsoka season two, it has to be split, right? It has to be split between what's going on with Ahsoka at whatever, Peridia. And then also what's going on with Thrawn in the galaxy. So I think you're right. Otherwise, it feels like if they don't cover that, it's so hard, because then you just need the standalone side story, which maybe you do, right? Maybe if it is the Grogu story about the Yoda species, you can tell that as like the side story that they're off on a separate adventure. But that would feel odd, because you have this, like you said, this dangling thread.
Well, there's a lot being worked on, you know, across the canon and across all these different shows. Like, even Bad Batch seems to be doing something on Mount Tantiss that I wouldn't be surprised if Mount Tantiss pops back up with Thrawn and whatever he does when he returns to the galaxy, given its importance in Heir to the Empire.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think seeing now, and we'll talk about this in a little bit when we cover, you know, episodes 10 and 11 of Bad Batch, but like, they are, I am less certain about what they're actually going to do in that show. Well, I have ideas, but I don't think what I was thinking originally was going to happen. Maybe in a good way. So I think Tantiss is definitely going to be in play, you know, during the New Republic era. The other question I have too is, considering where Ahsoka is, and if Ahsoka season two happens before that, it's less of a question, more of a statement, but like, if we're going to bring the New Republic into the mix in the movie, it's going to feel real clunky to me if Luke, Leia, and or Han are not involved in this, because those are the higher ups in the New Republic. Right. Like, it feels weird, like, because I love in Mandalorian or in Ahsoka, they mentioned like C-3PO shows up and mentions Leia. But like, you can only tell that story of just like they're off on a side adventure. It starts to feel like.
What if Han Solo will be in this problem?
I love it. I mean, please, because it starts to feel like, and sorry to the, everyone's family, but it feels like Paul Walker in like the Fast and Furious movies, just like the character is still alive. And they're always just like, yeah, he's off at a different family barbecue. Like, he's over here. Even when, you know, like, you can only do that so many times before you just, like, that feels weird to have these main heroes of the Republic not involved in this epic.
I bet they will be, though.
I think they will. I guess we're going
to
get.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past Favreau and Filoni to de-age the Trinity. You know what I mean? I wouldn't put it past them.
Every season of The Mandalorian has been a secret backdoor pilot for another show or another thing, or like, and part of me is just like, is this just a secret Luke, Han, and Leia story that they're trying to sell to us as like, as Mandalorian Grogu? Part of me feels like it's like Mandalorian.
Well, hints of the cloning the process definitely alludes to Snoke and alludes to, you know, the First Order, obviously, and Project Necromancer and all that sort of stuff, and what's going on Exegol, but Leia's role as a Jedi and learning to be a Jedi is late importance in the sequel trilogy. And I almost feel like Filoni, now that that is canon, Filoni could do a lot to sort of hash that out, really. Like,
yeah,
really,
I would love that.
Do something with that. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I wonder if you might get a Leia lightsaber fight moment or something. You know what I mean?
Please. Like it just, again, I mean, this, and this is what Star Wars does, right? It backfills canon.
Yeah.
It's what it's been meant to do since 1977. Right. Like it's what it's been doing. And like, that is like the most, one of the, and we'll experience it when we go through the marathon. One of the most electric moments to me in episode 9 is the Luke and Leia training.
Right.
10-second montage where I'm like, awesome. What? give us more of that. And that's it. Yeah, and it's all they can do. But like, yeah, like, please, like, let's have, like, all I want is, like, not a clip, but, like, give me a full fight with Leia with a lightsaber.
Be explored, essentially.
Sure. Absolutely.
Han, I don't really care. Like, I know he's, like, running the 5 sabers, like, race or the New Republic Fleet Academy or I don't know what he's doing, really.
The less Han's storylines we get, the better. Han can be it in a ton.
But to me, but like Indiana Jones was a primer for like doing a crazy Han thing in the Mandoverse or something. You know what I mean?
Right. They have all of them completely like... de-aged. And like Harrison Ford's is a notorious grump about these things. But if they're like, Harrison, you don't need to show up on set. Can we just use your likeness? There's part of me is like, Harrison's just gonna be like, yeah, sure. What do I care? Like, you know what I mean? Like he's seems fine with it. Like I think he'd be like, cool, do it. I don't care. Give me my check. Like,
yeah, like the most dashing version of Harrison Ford.
Yeah. And that looked so good in Destiny to Dial. That moment.
Yes. Yes.
Apart from the voice, which is an 80-year-old voice coming out of a
when people would complain about that moment, I was like, I don't see it. I actually think this works great, and I think it's actually awesome. Like
the
visuals
are like spot on. I was like, that's the part of that movie is just like, it's not AI, right? It's all just special effects. And part of me is like maybe this is the way to do another Indiana Jones movie. It's just like
the entire film.
Why not? Like why not at this point? Like. Sure. If it works, it works. And if the actor's on board and is providing the material, then just do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us tales. Like Tales of the Empire, which is our other piece of news.
There we go.
What a trailer.
Yeah.
What a trailer. It's a trailer, people.
It was. I love a surprise, too, because this was the first thing I was like figure out was is this just Tales of, they've been talking about Tales of the Jedi Season 2, and nope. We lied. It's actually Tales of the Empire.
Yeah. I'm thrilled. I couldn't ask for anything greater than sort of this exploration of the timeline because the fall of the Republic and sort of the advent of the Inquisitorius and the Empire's plan to purge the Jedi and all this sort of stuff, it's covered in the comics to an extent, but
yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
There are big pieces of puzzle pieces in that narrative, and then obviously Obi-Wan in New Hope talks about Vader working with the Empire to destroy the Jedi in the first lines we hear Obi-Wan speak, and it's like it's so mysterious and you just want to know what that was, that horrific sort of onslaught that Darth Vader led or whatever. And it's so cool that we're finally getting these stories. Like we're finally understanding how all of this started.
Yeah.
The Grand Inquisitor, I think is it Rupert Friend from Obi-Wan is voicing the character? It sounds like it's the live action counterparts are voicing a lot of the characters.
I have no proof of that, but it sounded like it.
Sound like Jason Isaacs from.
No, it didn't, which is surprising, but I guess you, that is, Rupert Friend is now the Grand Inquisitor, so it makes sense that they would
focus. So these are big canonical sort of stories that are really going to define what the Purge was, what the Inquisitorius, what happened to Barriss Offee, all this sort of stuff.
I know, and I was somewhat lukewarm. I think we all were kind of lukewarm on the Tales of the Jedi.
I liked it, so I personally thought it was genius, and like
I really like the Count Dooku side of things.
Yeah, like Dooku I think most intriguing Jedi character we've gotten from main canon, in any way really. And it's Tales of the Jedi does a lot to sort of showcase what's interesting about him.
The Ahsoka side was a bit of a head scratcher because it felt like a Filoni passion project where I'm like, this has been covered, and now you're just kind of slightly retconning or just like giving us a fast forward version of it. But like, this is where I'm like, I loved like, we actually had talked about this way back when. I don't know what episode, but we talked about like, give us Tales of the Jedi or Tales. I think we refer to like Tales of the Sith. I don't think
Tales of the
Empire, but this is like, basically
the other side of the coin, essentially.
Exactly. And they're doing it now. And yeah, like the Barriss Offee stuff is amazing. And it's also been something fans have been like, every time there's an Inquisitor who has a mask.
Yes.
The internet says that is Barriss Offee. Every time. Yeah. I have been guilty of it. I have recorded being guilty of it numerous times. Yeah. But like now we're finally going to get that story. And I love the fact that we're going to get like, of course she ended up.
It looks so good. Like, it looks so good.
Yep.
And then like, Vader at the end. I was like,
the Vader and the bowing. I know. So the hardest thing about this.
Yeah.
Is that comes out May 4th. As listeners know.
We will be preoccupied.
We'll be preoccupied until 8 p.m. after been up for 36 hours straight. So I'm like, do I get home and do I immediately go to bed or do I try to watch 6 episodes of Tales of the Empire before going to bed?
Oh, is it a binge drop?
Yeah, I think they're dropping. I think because that's how they did Tales of the Jedi, right? They dropped them all. I think it's just it is.
I'm fully not ready for that, but it's okay.
They're short though, right? Like, weren't they each like 10 minutes long? So I think at the end you get like an hour total, maybe something like that. I have to go back and look. And then the other thing I was gonna say is it Morgan Elsbeth? I can't remember if there's an A on that. But
Morgan Elsbeth the coolest character in Star Wars?
I do like her a lot. Trailer says yes. It says yes, and I remember like in Ahsoka being like I feel like we're missing her story like she's just kind of there after the episode she was in The Mandalorian, and I'm like, of course Filoni's in the background just being like, yeah, don't worry about it, we're gonna backfill, and I should have like trusted that we're gonna get more of this. And I'm so excited to get more of her story because she's super
like
interesting.
Battle droids like killed her people or something, and it was like it's so cool. It was like
takes on Grievous apparently at some point, like
it's so cool. By the way, really really fun trailer. I can't wait. I'm so excited. So
it looks great. I'm very excited by it. I love the animation style as always, and I think this is a great spot. And just like, it's one of those things we're gonna talk about, we may talk about it tonight, but like I honestly believe there's always going to be a Star Wars animated series in the works or airing on Disney Plus at any given time. So I love that. I feel like this is bridging the gap between the final season of The Bad Batch and whatever may come after, right?
Sure. Yeah. I hope The Acolyte sort of spawns a new High Republic era.
I would love that. That'd be cool. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Our final bit of news is a writer is joining James Mangold on the Dawn of the Jedi film. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And it's a writer we know well. It's Bo Willimon, who has a writing credit on Andor, a few episodes of Andor, a couple. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, a few. And the one that he was on, now I'm like scrolling through the Hollywood Reporter.
I got super... to Andor too quickly.
No. That's what I want to do. But it's super clunky. It's super clunky website. But I won't know the title. I won't get there. But he wrote on the Jailbreak episode of Andor.
No Way Out? Is that what
it's called? One Way Out. One Way Out, right? Because the whole thing is like, I think that might be the single best hour of Star Wars television written. Or not hour, but you know what I mean, of live action. Because like it is such a great Star Wars story in a way that you wouldn't think a Star Wars story could tell. It's just like it's almost a bottle episode, right? It's completely in the facility. And Andy Serkis should have won all of the Emmys that year for that episode, right? The idea of just him acknowledging there's one way out, and at the very end of just like, I can't swim. Like, it's just such, I will remember that look on his face at the moment of just like the pride of the breakout and knowing that he can't go with everyone else. It's just really an amazing moment in Star Wars story.
Yeah. It is great. I mean,
it's super well.
Announcement and Daughter of Ferrix are pretty great as well. Yes. Those episodes. But
yeah, he wrote on House of Cards, which like the Kevin Spacey of it aside is really good political intrigue, right? Like this
yeah. wrote Ides of March, I think I saw.
Yeah. Like this is the thing. Like I think we're starting to maybe figure out what this movie is, which might be smaller in tone, which I think it should be, or at least like really character focused, intrigue focused, right? Like really just
This is another story where I feel like this is impossible to break. It's like
You texted that.
You're basically writing these sort of origins of the Force and the Jedi and the Sith, essentially. And the only thing I can think is that the story almost has to show the inevitability of someone going to the dark side and someone remaining on the light side. And sort of the person going to the dark side maybe goes to the dark side for semi-legitimate reasons or reasons that are poetically intertwined with sort of whatever dynamic is occurring with their discovery of this power, right? And so
they keep the dark citing
side be essentially go natural
for yeah instead
of being unnatural. Like no, I that, think to me that's almost like what it has to do. Has
I agree. Like I think that's totally the way you tell it is like the dark side is the is within human nature and that is the easier path, the more seductive path. And the light side, like I almost want this whole thing to end with like 100 dark side users and 1 light side user, because it should be the special chosen, not chosen, but the special like person who decides to take the harder path, right? And discovers there's more power in the harder path, right? And not knowing it. Like it's hard to tell. That's this, but he talks,
I love that.
Like this idea of just like everyone takes the easy way, right? Which is to, because they have immediate access to the power by feeding into their rage and hatred. It's a human, like, I not to get too philosophical or whatever, but like anger is easy. Hatred is easy. Like I think about this all the time, having like having a toddler is like, they immediately go to anger and I'm sitting there also internally as a white male raised in this society, internally immediately going to anger when anything goes bad. And then having to take a second back to be like, wait a minute, like what's going on there, right? And it's like, I think that's just a really interesting way you can tell that story of just like, it takes a special, like whatever, to realize, no, what if I try love, right? What if I try something else? What if I try another way? And tapping into a power, like a hidden power that everyone
there's else something about to. Surrendering to the Force that I think is that you hear a motif sort of in Star Wars where people give themselves to the Force. And like you're saying, I would love a sort of a character that instead of trying to manipulate, control, or shift the pieces on the board in an aggressive way, like the characters who have embraced the dark side are doing, they're sort of surrendering themselves to the Force, seeing the Force as an ally, not wishing to control it. There's so much space to explore the light side, right, within the light side, that it's like, let's do it. Let's go there. Let's see what it means to be on the light, you know?
Right. Like, what if someone like unlocks the light side in a way? Like, what if the dark side has been the way it's been for however long and someone unlocks the light side, right?
Yeah. I like that too. The light side is harder to achieve. I love that. So you know, may the Force be with them. They're breaking probably the toughest story.
Oh man.
Story. It's
I can't imagine, like, the Rey story is tough, but like you get it, like there's like, you can tell that story, you have a lot to build on. The Filoni script is like, it's capping everything off, so you're building that, but man, to go all the way back and have to tell this and just have that pressure of just like, can't really mess this one up because this is the thing that everything else builds off of. It's wild. Are they sleeping? How do you get that job and then sleep? I'd be like, I would never look at the internet, and I would just.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe that's the best idea is honestly just go and do, you know, into sort of a hole and just write this thing, you know, like, get off the internet. Don't think about anything. Figure out what human nature, you know, like we're doing right now and what it means to embrace the dark or embrace the light side.
But then, and then on top of all this, like the philosophical stuff, super interesting, and I think you have to take that approach. But then, it's a movie, it's a Star Wars. Like, you also have to have giant battles and like action set pieces.
Maybe because it's so primordial, though. Maybe they'll really lean into the primordial aspects of what it means, right? And maybe there aren't Jedi or Sith, right? It's just people who use the Force, essentially. So you're just seeing the corruption that happens to those who use more of the dark side, and you're seeing the enlightenment that happens to those who use more of the light side, and it's not labeled, or it's not, there aren't these strict labels that we apply to these characters at all.
This might be a bit strong, but if I hear, if I hear someone say light side or dark side, it feels like they failed.
Right.
Like,
that shouldn't be the thing yet.
It's your audience. Trust your audience that we understand when they're tapping into the dark side or light side, right? Like, you can tell that through story about what's good and what's bad. But not label it that way. Like, I don't want to hear those terms.
Planet hopping odyssey, though. Like, that's what also confounds me. It's like, what is the war battle, and you're still within the Star Wars brand and IP. This is also going to be something that you have to imagine is going to be. There's going to be a whole era of storytelling, right? You know, within comics and ancillary material about this era that then originates with the film.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say this without trying to get too political, but Star Wars is also at its best always a reflection of what's currently going on in the world and in society. And so, like, if you're building on, you know, we have a lot of current wars going on, right? We have a lot of conflicts going on currently in the world. I mean, always, but particularly now, and two really major ones that are really horrific, right? And so, like, you don't have to hit that nail on the head, but if you're dealing with, like, two – similar to actually what happened in the High Republic is maybe you do have, like, two cultures that are warring against one another, and – the Jedi, the person kind of comes in the middle of this and is trying to be the peacekeeper, which is, like, again, Mangold keeps talking about the Ten Commandments.
The first peacekeeper.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great, because instead of a sort of messianic or, I don't know, just an altruistic leader, it's more of someone who's come to stop two warring parties.
Jedi, like, that's a Jedi thing.
Yeah, that's a cool. I really like that take. That's actually a really interesting take for what you do there, what the sort of main archetype is that you're exploring.
Again, you could not pay me enough to write it, but yeah.
No, yeah, and again, I would not want to be in their shoes, right?
Yeah,
because I just don't know. I don't know what this movie means. It's almost like you'd have to go on an endless sort of spirit inward journey yourself, and then figure out, oh, I got it. Like, it's this, and then this reflects this, and this is sort of something we need right now, and da da da. But I don't know. It's tough to do, because it's you also want to explore the pulpy, you know, space fantasy lore as well, where it's like, do you do more of the space fantasy lore and establish the Sith and the Jedi, or do you do a really philosophical and abstract story that sort of has a real message that sort of hits people in a deeper way?
I don't know either. Before Andor, I would say every Star Wars movie or show has to have a certain element of fun in it.
Yeah.
Right. However, Andor and has at this point very little fun in it. And that's not a critique, right? Like, there's not a lot of levity in Andor. It happens. The only thing we get in Rogue One is K2SO, right? Like, that's the only one. And then he gets a horrible, gut-wrenching demise. But so, like, part of me is just like, yeah, I guess you can tell this, you know, pretty serious. Of all the movies, I think probably Rogue One is the one that will be closest in tone, if I had to guess.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah.
And in terms of, like, you know, very serious, dealing with war issues, dealing with, like, stuff, and hopefully not being afraid to, again, Rogue One, I will always compliment the movie for the bravery of, like, yeah, no, they all died. Like, everyone you've been following for 2 hours is dead.
Yeah, I think that was the only way you could take that. Again, there's an inevitability to that story, which is like, you know what? It just, the stakes. And again, Andor, I think, is so successful because it's like you're saying, there's not a lot of fun, but it's a lot of ratcheting up of the stakes and creating tension and keeping things unknown and keeping Cassian on the run, basically. And as he's on the run, he's learning. It's our favorite kind of pieces. It's this outsider on the run, sort of, you know, arrest warrants are out for him by the Empire, but he's also learning on the job, and it's sort of this growth, but also this sort of renegade sort of character that it's really fun to watch. It's just thrilling. It is. It's a thrilling show.
It's super engaging. It's it makes you come back for more. And that's my argument of why, like, Star Wars always doesn't need that levity or fun to necessarily get people to engage with it. Just tell good stories.
Yeah. And yeah. Perrin's having all the fun on that show.
That is true.
But enough about Andor. Let's talk about what's current for Star Wars shows right now. That is The Bad Batch.
Yeah.
Episode 10 and 11? I can't believe we're here already. Like, this
I know. What? It's wild. We only have, like, what, 4 episodes left, I think?
Yeah. Do you want to take your victory lap?
So here's the thing.
I don't know if we did. We got no proof, but no. I'm thoroughly in your corner now.
I had a whole bit. I was sitting there watching episode 12 or whatever, the second one. I had this whole bit where I was gonna come into the podcast winded and be like, I'm sorry, I'm so winded from all my victory laps. And I was like sitting there watching this thing, like planning the whole bit in my mind. I'm like, this is gonna be great. And then they never took off his freaking mask. Because yes, I'm now more convinced than ever that that's just tech. Like, that has to be tech. Because here's the thing.
Yeah.
You're now keeping a mask on a character for that long in a Star Wars movie. And if you take that mask off or never take it off and it's just nothing, that's messed up.
The amount of screen time.
Yeah.
The amount of sort of technical work and gadgetry he uses and his ability to sort of disarm that ship that we focus on for a second. And then his ability, you know, his use of explosives and gadgets. It's like, this is tech.
Yeah. It's also, it's so she,
it's, you wouldn't keep exploring the character to the extent that you're doing if it wasn't tech.
It's no 100%. And the other thing is, like, it's voiced by D. Bradley Baker, as CX2 is voicing that. So it has to be a clone. It has to be a clone. And what other clone is it going to be? Like, it'd be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We're not there yet. That's episode 11. That's Point of No Return. We'll talk more about that in a second. But we got to talk about Identity Crisis, episode 10, which is. It just starts on Mount Tantiss with the, like, going into the vault. And I don't know if you were doing this, but I paused it and frame by frame was trying to see what Hemlock was looking at.
Yep.
But while he's looking into that pod that was open for just a brief moment, he's holding up a data pad that has the Shadow Trooper schematics on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are we to think that that's connected, or are we to think he's just getting a call from a Shadow Trooper or the Shadow Trooper that we've been dealing with?
Yeah, I don't, I kind of assumed it's related, right? Like,
to what's in the pod, right? Which is Shadow Troopers essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I assumed, and I was going to say, wait, now I'm just blanking. Yeah, absolutely. I think completely related to what we're talking about. And, like, they just, CX2 looks like kind of a pre Shadow Trooper in a way, right? Like,
yeah, no. I have to imagine maybe that's the portion of the laboratory where they're making Shadow Troopers. And then we get to go into the vault itself and see the specimens, but they're just children. It's just heartbreaking. It's devastating.
Rough. It's real. It's real rough.
Just that scene. I was like, this is the saddest episode of any Star Wars thing I've ever seen ever. It's just kids who are being held against their will in, like, a room that just has, like, it's like a metallic room with nothing in it. Just like three tables.
Their bunks
are right there. And
it
just
looks like a prison. And they go into the bunk, and the bunk kind of looks like the bunks from Andor. It's like,
horrible.
It's like they're prisoners. They're just in a prison. And, like, I was watching that. Again, the entire episode starts with the kidnapping of a baby.
We're going to the game train tonight. Like it's about to happen. Like, I am so angry. Listen, I play a lot of Star Wars Unlimited, the new TCG that's out there.
Yeah.
Cad Bane comes out in the next set. I vow to never put him in any of my decks. Like,
that card.
Against every moral fiber of my being, I do not ever want to be associated with Cad Bane. I feel like this is the worst character in Star Wars.
Absolutely unrepentant evil. Yeah. Like more than like even the Emperor. Like, it's wild. And that's the other thing I'll say. Like, you know what? Hey, I am not the biggest Cad Bane fan at all. I don't like that character. But I will say this for Dave Filoni. It's like, at least you're not trying to give that guy a redemption arc, right? Like, you were just like constantly trying to paint him like
he's like lawful evil. Like, he's just the worst.
He's the worst. Like, this is the worst thing you said. Like you have to never bring this character into your show again. This has to be the last time we see Cad Bane, because you can't top this. How do you top this? I mean, you can top this, but you can't show it on TV. Like you can't kill the kid. But like, this is it. This is like the worst thing this character like,
stole has. A baby.
Stole a baby. Like, yeah. Like, at least he like only stunned the mom, but still like stole the baby and like did have the best line. In the entire episode, though, which is when he is handing the baby off to I can't think of her name, the clone, the female.
Oh, Emery Carr.
Emery Carr. She's asking questions and he says something about I can't remember the line off the top of my head, but he says something like, your questions tell more about you than they think they do, or something like that. Like, he tells us, he says it's a great line. Just like him almost warning her, just like, I kind of know you're starting to slip into not trusting the Empire. Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Emery Carr as well. We have to talk about this character because Identity Crisis, I think, refers to her, essentially.
And yeah, so, yeah.
This sort of crisis, the conflict she's experiencing, having to getting all this new clearance and taking part in Project Necromancer and then meeting these young kids who've just been, you know, kidnapped and are being experimented on. And she's just, you can tell there's real conflict and that she's obviously making a turn here and giving one of the kids a little like stuffed animal type thing, or Omega's.
Yep.
Boy, essentially.
Yeah. The one she made when she was in captivity. So, yeah.
You can tell she cares for these kids and she's going to be crucial to this sort of escape plan that I imagine is going to happen. But also, like, big developments in the next episode that we'll talk about in terms of who's coming to join, who may be coming to join all these kids and what might happen next. But Emery Carr is just such a cool character. Like, I'm really just excited that we're exploring her a lot in this season.
Yeah, and I appreciate, like, you're kind of watching, like, you just, I don't know, like, you kind of assume she's going to turn from the start of the season, at least I did.
Yeah.
But, like, they've done it in a way that makes sense, right? Like, it's not, like, I love that, like, Omega softened her up a little bit, and then
sure.
I love the fact, any character is, like, completely on board with evil until, like, there's a moment of just, like, oh, no, this is too far. Like, the second she walks in there and sees their kids, you're just, like, she's just, like, no. Nope, you can just tell she's gonna eventually.
And these kids, and then she's like, if there weren't adults that could, you know, be used as subjects for your experimentation or whatever she says to Hemlock. But are we to suppose that maybe if these kids do escape, they're out there with high M counts and just being awesome, you know, force sensitive?
They are. Again, I think this points to the need for a show, a cartoon for the Path. Like, they have to be taken in by the Path, right?
Right. And I think Asajj Ventress was setting that up. I think we all theorized that when we watched that episode. Because Fennec Shan is connected to Asajj Ventress, and you just feel like there's some sort of a network at play here.
I really do think the next animated series is going to be Fennec Shan and Asajj Ventress.
And Quinlan.
And Quinlan, yeah. We can bring Quinlan in.
Yeah.
Fans would demand I would love it. But I think
you're so right. As well. Yeah. But so this episode was great.
The other thing I want to say about this episode, which we'll move on, this will be real quick, but like I just want to point out that, like, is this the first Bad Batch episode without a single member of the Bad Batch or Bad Batch family in it? Like, we never see them. It never cuts to them. In the beginning,
we get a little bit, maybe.
Do we? I thought we opened with the baby.
Maybe I thought we opened with Hemlock, but there might be a bit with the Bad Batch in the very, very beginning, but I'm not too sure.
No, I think certain we start with the feline. Yeah. With the kidnapping of the child.
I think that's smart because you know, what we learn in this next episode, we're pretty much setting up the allies and enemies for what's to come.
It's very true. It is the kind of that I always refer to as moving chess pieces on the board. But in a way, that's interesting. The other thing is that we get in that episode, in episode 10, is that they do start to somewhat reveal like why they're getting kids with high M counts and that and why Omega's special. This like, kind of idea, like it's not
100% how haunting clear. Was the Nala Se scene?
Oh yeah,
that was haunting.
Haunting. And, like, she does not sound good.
Scene I've seen in Star Wars to date. It was
yeah.
She was just like she looked so downtrodden in the cell, and you'd never seen them kind of hunched over like that. There was something fascinating about that scene and sort of the defeat that is sort of emanating from Nala Se, and also this sort of like desperate need to stop Hemlock at what he's doing. And but also like there is an unfeeling aspect to Kaminoans where it just feels like the way that maybe that they evoke emotion or present emotions, it feels very like alien. Like there's a real sort of like there's like a separation from emotions with Kaminoans, but you felt it sort of like you felt a lot of emotion coming through in that scene, which I thought was so unique. I was like, oh, this is a Kaminoan. Actually, there's an exposed wound here with this Kaminoan,
we're
finally getting a little bit more emotion from Nala Se, and I really like that scene quite a bit.
No, me too. It's an amazing scene, and I think this is like the furthest in the timeline we know anything about Nala Se, right? Like I think when we clicked on her, so like part of me is just like she sounds really down and also doesn't sound healthy or good, and I'm like,
it was a unique scene.
I feel like she's not walking for this galaxy.
Her eyes are kind of just really wide in that scene, and
you
really never see Kaminoans looking like that. Really, like that desperate. It's not something that they're
it's like. Unsettling.
They're almost. Very regal beings.
Yeah,
kind of walk around and are very tall. And it was a weird scene. It was very interesting.
Point
of no return.
Point of no return. Yep, as predicted, we talked about
on Pabu. We were right.
Yeah, Pabu is not looking good. I mean, not completely toast because we'll skip to the end a little later with Omega, but like definitely hurting. They blew up all their like ability to fish. And Ben's not here. I know we're skipping all around, but boy, when I saw the. When I saw the Bad Batch's Marauder, I thought of Ben. I'm like, Ben's not gonna be able to talk about it.
Like, oh no, Ben. Yeah, here's your answer. Where's the Marauder? It's gone. Yeah,
it is. Pile of scrap. Yeah, really blew that thing up.
Harrowing Imperial raid, like, and people, like, just citizens of Pabu were just terrified by the troopers. I was like. This kind of what's fascinating about this is it sort of goes against some of the ancillary maybe Legends material at this point that sort of talks about how Palpatine tried to create this like this almost like this false facade that they were the do-gooders and they were the protector of the galaxy, and he clad his troopers in this brilliant white armor to sort of show that they were always there to protect and bring order and all this sort of like there was sort of an image of there were servants of the citizens of the galaxy and sort of heroic in nature or champion cause of order and bringing end to chaos and things like that, and it just feels like they're purely villainous, like they're purely
raining through fear.
Everyone terrified by. Yeah, exactly. The sort of moving through fear,
which I'm okay with, because part of me is like I hope part of the story they're telling, which is actually similar to like the show Firefly, which is like different areas have different relationships with the government, right? Yeah. Which means like the central like planets benefit from the Empire's reign, and so it does feel benevolent to them, right? And then because they're all benefiting, and then when you get to these outer places. They feel the yoke of control on them, and there's fear there. I would like that type of storytelling. Yeah.
When the galaxy turns a blind eye to this planet, the Empire just sort of is truly, truly, fascistic and aggressive. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So, which is how dictatorships work, right? Yeah. Like people, dictatorships work because some people benefit from a dictatorship. You know, a small proportion, but very powerful people and usually wealthy people benefit from a dictatorship. And it's the marginalized who suffer the most and whose stories aren't listened to or believed.
And when they mask their cause,
yep,
you know, with the idea that Pabu is harboring some sort of fugitive, it's like they're going to turn it up to 100, you know, 110% and of just fascism and just be truly authoritative and cruel to everyone.
Yeah. No, the party line would be, hey, if that happened, they must have done something to deserve it.
Yep. Yeah. So they'll just cover it up no matter what. Yeah. Truly devastating. Yeah, when the Marauder blew up, that was tough. I got to say, though, it was like it actually felt like there were some high stakes here. Like it felt like I thought Wrecker was going to die.
I kept thinking people were going to die.
I thought Baxter was going to die. I was like, what is happening?
Honestly, and I kept trying to remind myself it's a cartoon and no one's really going to die because Tech's not dead. But like there are moments, especially when you had like and then you had Hunter hanging on the wing.
Right.
And I'm like, he's going to die. And then it's like 2 seconds later, I know he's fine. But it was like tense. It was tense through the entire episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear a new wild Omega theory? Tinfoil hats completely on. This is not going to happen. But there's a scene at the end when she turns herself over and she's like wearing a helmet and her like golden locks are flowing and she's like backlit. And boy, if she didn't look like a Skywalker to me.
Oh, that's fascinating.
There's Anakin Skywalker DNA. So. Yeah. Golden locked little kid who's like willing to sacrifice themselves for the greater good. It's not gonna happen, but there was like a hero moment with her, which is like, oh, she's totally a Jedi, which we'll talk about the final shot in a moment.
That makes more sense. Maybe that's like, more on brand than the Avar Chris theory that I've been
I want the Avar juggling. Chris. I want the Avar. If I'm right, I'll be upset. Because that like the galaxy needs to be larger, not smaller, as we talk about a lot, and having her be like a Skywalker clone.
I just don't know when they harvested Anakin's blood.
They would. It's not, again, I say this with like knowing this is not going to happen, but it's just something about that shot where I just went, oh, that looks like Luke. That looks like Luke on like Tatooine. And I'm like, well, it's not Luke because obviously, but I'm like, could be Anakin.
Yeah, I think you're on it. That's actually interesting. No. I would be fascinated if that were to be true. It's a very cool idea. It's a very cool theory. I like it a lot. I just don't think they would harvest Anakin Skywalker's blood.
Can you also imagine if in a cartoon they introduced the idea of an Anakin Skywalker clone floater? That would break it.
I like it because it sort of like it undercuts the sort of prophecy of the Chosen One thing, which I think is actually an interesting message.
Which is interesting, right? If you're talking about that only one clone has the ability to be, how they refer to it as, has the ability to like allow midichlorians to be like connected. But in other words, you almost have Omega is another Chosen One storyline because she's the chosen clone, right? So it's like, well, the chosen clone is probably a clone of the Chosen One.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, and I think it makes sense. I think they would maybe try to do it. Maybe Palpatine had it. Maybe shared it.
He sleeps in his egg. He's always asleep in his tank. And Mustafar, you can get a needle in there quickly and grab it. I mean, you know.
I went for the Avar Chris theory just because that was like an old blood sample from an old medical facility from somewhere hidden that they got a handle on, and it's sort of like, to me, I was like, oh.
I love the Avar Chris theory. I want them to do that. I think
she
that
wears
is
a cool like tiara in the first season.
She is very Avar Chris like. I was just thinking of like, where's the other toe-headed blonde that we know of in Star Wars? I'm like, we've had two, and they both came from Tatooine. Yeah,
like a major blonde Jedi master from the High Republic era, who's basically like the main hero, I guess, of the Order. Essentially, like she's actually the first chapter of the first book in the High Republic era is all about Avar Chris, I'm pretty sure.
Totally. And I love that. And I think that would like it, that to be the person who does the thing where I'm like, I always think about the logistics of, you know, planning a multi billion-dollar shared universe franchise. But I'm like, it would totally make sense to do that because you're pulling in eras together with something like The Acolyte coming out soon. You want to build up interest in the High Republic. I think also from a storytelling narrative standpoint, it makes a lot of sense, but it also makes a lot of sense in terms of your brand. So I would not be surprised. I was going to say the other thing I was going to say, Crosshair, this episode, that I love what we're doing with Crosshair. I love that he's like,
He's now like Omega's project.
He's been Omega's project. There was a moment where I had pre-written a line in my head that didn't come true, where she's convincing him to let her turn herself over to the Empire. And she says something like, the mission is larger than this. And I really wanted to say is like, you are the mission. Like, I wanted Crosshair to say that to her, like, you are the mission. Because I feel like the Bad Batch believes that. But it wouldn't work for the plot.
That's a great line. Yeah, that'd be a great line for him.
But I get why they didn't do that, because you have to let her, for story reasons, turn herself over. And that missed shot at the very end when it blasts off, like, oof.
Oh, what a great ending. You just want him to make the shot. And it's so Star Wars for him to land the shot.
Yep.
Like, every Star Wars story just has this thread the needle, perfect shot.
Right?
Yeah,
and it just misses, and they watch it go past and hit the water. Like, it's just
in the water, or whatever. It's like
total Empire Strikes Back vibes with the
It was such a loss. It was such a massive L. I was like, oh wow,
yeah,
okay.
It's a great way to end it, because it's like, you got four episodes left. Like, now you are, this is the point of no return. Like, this is the point of no return for your story arc, right? Like, in terms of like, this is it. We're going into the end game after this. You can clock out now, but this is it. Like,
So now Filoni has to answer the Omega questions, because he's now Omega is now going to join the other, you know, kids with the high M count who are in, you know, imprisoned there, because we just set those characters up, essentially. We just set up other kids who are Omega's age, essentially.
Absolutely.
In Mount Tantus. And you're telling me that she's not going to interact with them, and then after interacting with them, they're not going to escape and use their force powers, when Jax just showed that he memorized the key code and he's planning to escape. And it's sort of like, it really does instill this sort of like sub, this now with this plot that we're going to escape. We're going to get out of here.
And
Omega's coming to help, essentially.
Right. It has to. And the other thing is, like, you've now clearly, through multiple scenes of dialogue with Crosshair and Omega and through the plot, completely incapacitated their ability to find out where Mount Tantus is. This is their last hope, right? Which means in Star Wars, if all else fails, the Force, right? So the only way, in my thought process, the only way the Bad Batch can get to Mount Tantus is through the Force in some ways. And so my thought is, yes, they're going to reach out to Asajj Ventress somehow. They're going to communicate, and Asajj is going to tell the Bad Batch where Mount Tantus is. Like, it's got to be communication through the Force.
How did you find us on Pabu or whatever, right? Like,
yeah,
how did you find us? Because in that episode she said, I had a feeling or whatever, and found me, or I have my ways or something,
right?
So they're instantly going to reach out to her, because they know that, and then they already are having difficulty trusting her. So it's just friction that's to be explored dramatically, obviously. But then she's the answer. She's the only one they can trust to
if it's if you're going to rely on the Force, which I think you have to in a Star Wars story at this point, if you've gone to the point of just like, because then they have like another like, oh no, they figured out how to hack and message the Bad Batch. It's just like, that feels writerly to me in a weird way of just like, well, then you might as well just have had him land the shot. Right. Like, why do you remove that element if you're not going to add the fantastical Force to the story? The other thing is, like, the end of the episode ends with her. I was looking at Wikipedia to see what they say. They have her meditating. Do you see that scene when she's there? She closes her eyes. And she seems like she just looks to me like a person trying to reach out with the Force. when she's in the shuttle with CX2. With Omega. Last scene of the episode is Omega, like, closing her eyes and sure looking like a Jedi trying to reach out with the Force.
Yeah, I wonder. And yeah. After having made a connection with Asajj Ventress, I wonder if that's exactly who she's trying to commune with.
I'm wondering. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I would love that. I don't see Vader coming into this season at all.
I hope not.
Having already seen the Emperor, I wouldn't be surprised if Asajj V. Pelp happens in this season.
I mean, maybe.
I could see that, maybe. Like, her going to help free everyone at Tantus, and then Pelp being like, no, my you know, evil experiment, and going to fight her, or going to sort of add to the lines of defense for the facility or something. Like, I wonder. I do wonder if we see a Pelp again.
Yeah, they're not shy about bringing Palpatine into the animated stuff, no. Right? If you think about, like, Rebels, like, he has a lot of screen time in Rebels.
Sure.
So I wouldn't be surprised if you do that. Yeah.
Because I almost want to see Asajj fight someone who is at her level, essentially.
Like, yeah.
I don't know if it's a clone that Hemlock has locked away that we haven't seen yet.
Maybe.
Which there could be a very high chance that that's what Asajj fights, essentially. Like, you almost want to see Asajj fight someone with a lightsaber and it to be an awesome fight.
I would love that. And we still don't know we know now, like, what the subjects are, which was a good reveal. I don't think at any of our bingo cards we had, like, children, but of course that makes sense.
I think we knew that Palpatine was capturing Force sensitives. And,
yeah, like, it totally makes sense. Children, but I just think we're all too good of people to be like, oh yeah, it's totally kids. But we don't know what's in the tanks, right? And, like, that's got to be a reveal at this. Like, again, I mean, maybe I'm overthinking it, but you can't go like this many episodes and just be like, open it up and it to be like a whatever thing. So it's got to be like a Snoke or a Palp or like
it's got
a clone of Asajj or dead Jedi or something. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we shall see.
We'll see. We will see.
Next episode is called Juggernaut. Any guesses what's going on with that?
Juggernaut.
The Kane Morocco. Is Kane Morocco showing up and suddenly it's a crossover in that match?
Dear stepbrother. Right?
So, such a dumb character, but one of my favorite characters in comic book history is Juggernaut. I just love him. They're still using him great in X-Men comics.
Like, with Charles and his brother, right? Like, your stepbrother.
It's such a 60s comic book written character. Just like, we have a small guy in a wheelchair. What's the polar opposite? A giant, massive man mountain.
Conflict and friction. What could be more, you know?
Right.
I wonder. Maybe it's the thing in the pod, right? Maybe it's whatever the experiment is that Hemlock's looking at in this episode.
Right.
You can only tease this so much until you actually show us what's in these pods. Like,
come on. I'm a little worried we're gonna do the because they love doing this now in like TV shows where you're just like, okay, this is clearly end game. Our characters what's that?
Campfire episode,
kind of like, a campfire, or just like a side mission episode, which I'm like, just let's not do this. Like, the next four episodes, I really hope are just like moving along. Which if you're doing it, it's only going to be 2 hours of screen time, and that seems to be needed to probably land this thing.
Be a ship or something. They lost a Marauder. Maybe they need a giant ship to help assail Mount Tantus or something.
Yeah, totally. I'm fascinating. It could be a ship.
It could be character, who knows?
Yep.
Juggernaut sounds like ship though to me.
Like, I like it. I would love to see a ship called the Juggernaut. That would be a good name. It would
be a weird science experiment on Tantus too. Who knows?
Yep. I could see it. Could be a giant beast. Could they do love the? They did refer to the Zillow beast being necessary in this whole thing.
It's felt so creature featurey this entire season so far that it's like, we've already clocked so many cool creatures. Like, I think we can. We can change up the plotting, you know.
Agreed.
And that's not like criticism. It's just you nailed it. Like, I'm just all I gotta say is hats off. Like, we got so many cool creatures already that 100%. I'm excited to see other, you know, maybe other plotting. You know, I'm hopeful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll see.
Cool. Anyways, Ben will be with us next week.
Yeah. I barring any like major breaking news or drops. The hopeful plan is to cover the High Republic books.
Yes.
Along with episode 12 of Bad Batch.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait. We've got all that to get to. I definitely want to talk about Star Wars Unlimited, the card game that's out there.
Yeah.
Again on the pod, new information dropped about the next set that's coming out.
Yeah. Very exciting stuff. Let's get an update next week for me. I'd love to hear it.
We'll do an update on that. I'm sure there's video game news that Ben will want to jump into. I'm sure there's lots.
There will be. That's the other news that came out is they're doing a character trailer for Star Wars Outlaws is dropping on Tuesday.
Oh, perfect.
So we can talk about that trailer. Perfect. So we'll talk about that trailer, talk about High Republic, talk about Bad Batch, get a Star Wars Unlimited update. It'll be another full episode. That'll be great.
Sweet. All right. Love it. Signing off. May the Force be with you. As always, Cantina Chronicles, follow, share us on Instagram, all the socials. We're out here in the stars, and we're happy that you joined us today. So
yeah,
thank you. See you next week.